Thanks for listening to the Best of Outkick the Coverage podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 3 to 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for Outkick the Coverage at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every morning on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis on Fox Sports Radio.
Appreciate all of you hanging out with us. Major League Baseball working on a plan to potentially come back that would involve an East, a West, and a Central division. 10 games each, 10 teams each playing over 100 games. The East would be the Yankees, the Mets, the Red Sox, the Nats, the Orioles, the Phillies, the Pittsburgh Pirates, Toronto Blue Jays, Tampa Bay Rays, Miami Marlins. The West would be the Dodgers, Angels, Giants, A's, Padres, all in California. Then the Diamondbacks, the Rockies, and then we go to Texas, the Rangers, the Astros, and the Mariners would be in that group as well. And then in the Central, you'd have the Cubs, the White Sox, the Brewers, the Cardinals, the Royals, the Reds, the Indians, the Twins, the Braves, and the Tigers. But the question that we are discussing right now is, I think, a really monumentally big one. And it is, who should bear the risk of loss when these leagues are not playing their games? When the NBA doesn't finish the postseason, same thing for the NHL. That's the vast majority of the people come in and watch the postseason, not the regular season. Major League Baseball has not started. There are reports out there that cable and satellite distributors, that is the Comcasts of the world, the DirecTVs of the world, the Dish Networks of the world, are starting to balk at paying full price for instance, ESPN, when there are no games that are actually taking place. And so if you think about the entire industry of how does money go, this is a big question that a lot of people don't really think about. How does money go from a TV perspective, from you're in my pocket into, let's say, LeBron James's pocket or Mike Trout's pocket or any other athlete out there? How does the athlete end up getting our money? The answer is through cable and satellite from a television perspective. The other way is easier, right? If you go to a game, you understand that by buying a ticket, you are giving money to the team, which then is going to pay the player. That's a little bit easier of a way for most fans to understand. Oh, if I go buy a ticket in an arena or a stadium, the money that I pay to that player then ends up going to the team and the player. Okay, that's kind of relatively easy for you guys to understand. But how does the money from a television perspective, which is where most player salaries are coming from, how does that get to the player? Well, there are several different conduits, right, that it works through. So let's say, you know, roughly, every person out there that has a cable or satellite subscription, let's just round it up. Let's say you're paying $10 a month to ESPN for your cable and satellite subscription. And so that $10 that comes out of my pocket is, or your pocket, goes into your larger cable and satellite bill. And most of you aren't really aware that every individual channel has a cost, but it does. So that let's say you're paying $100, $10 of that goes to ESPN, okay? Of your $100 cable or satellite bill, $10 of that, let's say, goes to ESPN. ESPN, that $10, well, how does it get from there? So your $10 goes to ESPN. ESPN then takes that $10, and they then pay a league for the league's rights, and then the league, the television rights, and then the league distributes that money to the teams, and then the teams distribute that money to the players. So your $10 goes through ESPN to eventually work its way down to the players. Well, the question that I'm asking, and I think it's a good one, is what happens when the games don't occur? When the contracts aren't being fulfilled, who should bear that risk of loss? Risk of loss is a big thing in most contracts. Right now, it's you and me. It's the fans. We're still paying the players for games that they aren't putting on. So by and large, the players aren't really losing very much. They're still getting a large percentage of their salary because the TV spigot has not been turned off. And the TV spigot is you and me taking money out of our wallets and paying players. Now, I don't know about you, but I think a lot of people out there are saying, wait a minute, why should the fan bear the risk of loss over the coronavirus pandemic? Why should we still be paying full price for events that aren't taking place? And that is a question that I think a lot of you out there are just thinking about now for the first time, because in the poll question that I put up, which nearly 3,000 of you have voted in, I said, hey, who should bear the risk of loss from games getting shut down? Fans, players and teams, cable satellite companies, or the channels like ESPN, FS1, and NBC Sports Network? Well, overwhelmingly, you guys are saying the players and the team should. 47% of you are saying the players and the team should bear the risk of loss. 28% of you are saying ESPN, FS1, NBC Sports Network. 19% of you are saying the cable satellite companies. Only 6% of you are saying the fans. So 94% of my audience, at least, is saying the fans shouldn't bear the risk of loss here. Do you know who's bearing the risk of loss right now? It's the fans. And I wonder whether we're going to see class action lawsuits filed by cable and satellite subscribers against these leagues for not putting games on and saying, okay, you're entitled to not put the games on, but why should we have to pay full price for a station that says, hey, we're going to have the NBA playoffs for you and the NHL playoffs and Major League Baseball when you're not putting the games on? It's a really good question. 877-996-6369. I bet I'm the only person who's going to ask this question in the entirety of sports media, even, because I don't think most people are thinking about it, but it goes to the very essence of when sports are going to get back and how they're going to be back. What do you guys think? Let me go around the horn here. Danny G, when you think about this series of interlocking contracts by which players end up and teams end up and leagues end up getting paid, who do you think should bear the risk of loss?
It's such an interesting topic because everybody could be pointing fingers.
Yeah.
Because it's not like they're not playing the games out of laziness or a contract dispute. It's because of a pandemic. I'm wondering if the distributors and leagues can maybe meet each other in the middle. In other words, can they split any losses evenly? I mean,
That makes sense in theory, but they're still splitting our money.
Right. Well, we the fans should be getting the rebate, but my experience with cable companies, distributors, and everything else we've all been through paying our cable bills every month, I don't think that's going to happen. I'm assuming the customers aren't going to catch a break.
Oh, and I think that there very likely may well be class action lawsuits filed over this.
Well, I think the reason why our listeners are voting that they think the players and teams should be at the biggest risk is because they're the actual product. If you think about it like a concert, if a band can't do a big show, the production company and the fans shouldn't eat the cost.
That's right.
Of the money that went into the operations leading up to the
big
concert.
I think there's a good logic to it. I think if you take it outside the world of sports, that's not a bad idea.
Yeah, the band still doesn't make all the ticket money off of fans that didn't get to see the concert.
No, you get a refund.
Right.
If you have a concert ticket or you're going to a stand-up comedy act or whatever it is, and the event doesn't take place, people would riot.
Oh,
right,
yeah.
I mean, like, fans would lose their mind. If you pay $100 to go see Beyonce or Justin Timberlake or the Rolling Stones or whoever your favorite music producer is, and then the events don't take place, you would never expect that you owe the $100. That's what's going on right now.
I had a concert to attend the end of May, and I just got a notification saying that it's been postponed, so I haven't got my refund yet.
Okay, but that's different. In that respect, right? Like, the idea is that they're still going to put on their performance.
Yeah. But either you get to see the show or you're going to get your money back, Roberto.
That's right.
But
yeah.
In this case,
this is different.
We just all still pay our cable bill and we have to eat it.
And we know that we're not going to get the full performance, right? So even if Major League Baseball comes back, they're talking about only having a 100-game season. So you will have paid for 60 games of Major League Baseball that you'll never be able to see. And if the NBA and the NHL don't come back, you will have paid for a huge majority of the value of the NBA and the NHL is predicated on the value associated with the playoffs, right? That's when the vast majority of people actually watch the NBA and the NHL to see who's going to win the championship, who's going to watch the playoffs. If they don't end up doing the playoffs, then arguably 80% of the value that you already paid for with the NBA and the NHL never materializes. And players are being paid as if they have performed. I think that strikes most fans as being fundamentally unfair. What about you, Dub? When you work through like sort of the mechanisms by which, you know, the sausage is made, so to speak, like, right, we're kind of looking behind the curtain at the business mechanisms by which games are put on. Like, the fans are the ones getting screwed here from an economic perspective.
Yeah, they certainly are. And this is such a complex issue. It's honestly difficult to kind of wrap your mind around. But to me, because every single, like you mentioned last segment, every single party you can make a case for that it's unfair.
Yeah.
But to me, the most unfair, if you want to break it down in that sense, is the fans. Because at the end of the day, they're kind of, the fans are the people who are starting this whole engine of the payments getting made. And for them to be bearing the loss doesn't seem fair to me when you have all these other companies, all these other networks, all these teams and owners.
And by the way, millions of dollars. But that's what I was going to circle back around on. Many of the fans who are paying for the player salaries to still exist are losing their jobs and or being hit directly financially already, right? So it's like a double-barreled thing for fans. There's a lot of you out there like, wait a minute, I'm paying millions of dollars to LeBron James and Mike Trout at the same time that I'm losing my job and they're not doing their job.
Exactly. And that's exactly the point I was about to make. So to me, that is the highest level of unfairness to me in this whole situation involved.
Yeah. What about you, Eddie? Have you thought about this?
I have a lot, actually. And it's interesting that we're in day 40-something, I think, of the lockdown of sports.
I think that's right, yeah.
The only two times I have watched subscription-based services is for The Last Dance and The Draft. And that's it. I haven't watched cable television, regular television, not one time. And so I've been thinking, I know that I'm hopeful that sports is going to return at some point, but I've considered, should I just completely cancel my DirecTV?
Yeah.
I mean, what am I paying for here, So, I mean, obviously my viewing habits are so based around sports. I mean, it's not even funny. And I'm still, the two things I watched are sports related. So,
yeah,
I've thought a lot about this, but I would say, I mean, it only makes sense that the leagues and the players are the ones who are, they're the ones who, I mean, they don't want to, but they're the ones who can absorb this. We can't absorb this.
Not only that, they could choose to play if they wanted to. Right? I mean, you may not like it, but if all of a sudden the leagues and the players, you told them, hey, your salary's going to zero, I think that players would be like, okay, we got to go to work. I mean, I think most of them would, but right now we're basically providing them with unemployment insurance by paying their full salaries while they're not working as fans. And the other aspect of this is, like, if you want to analogize, Roberto was talking about a concert. Like, I think every single person out there, it's an easy analogy. If you had concert tickets and the concert isn't put on and your favorite concert performer just said, hey, I'm not going to do the concert, but I'm going to keep your money. I'll do a concert again down the line and you can continue to pay me for that one as well. People would riot, right? It doesn't matter who your favorite performer is. J-Lo, the Rolling Stones, Taylor Swift, whoever your favorite performer is, if they canceled a concert and then they said, hey, we're going to go ahead and keep your money, but we'll do another concert down the line and we'll let you pay for that one too, people would lose their minds. And even to just take it into the world of entertainment, imagine if Netflix suddenly got overloaded bandwidth-wise, and you couldn't access Netflix. And Netflix said, oh, well, we'll let you, we're going to let you in 3 months, we'll let you access Netflix. And in the meantime, you're going to have to keep paying full price even though you can't watch Netflix. There would be a riot, right? People would be like, Netflix is the worst company ever. And I'm not trying to pick on Netflix, Disney Plus, you know, whatever streaming service you subscribe to. If suddenly the technology was such that they were not able to put on their product and yet they charged you full freight for it, people would say that's totally unacceptable. Well, that's what's happening right now in the world of sports, and fans are bearing all the loss. And I don't think most fans have even realized it. 877-996-6369. Dub, do we have anybody who wants to weigh in?
Yeah, we still got a few callers here. Let's go to Robert in Las Vegas.
By the way, been 49 days since Rudy Gobert. So we're coming up almost on 2 months, and we're easily going to get to 2 months without sports really existing on the traditional sports networks.
Hey, what's up, Clay? First time caller. Usually I listen to you guys driving home from work at the casino, but
yeah, well, we know that feeling. I feel for a lot of people out in Las Vegas. I was reading an article. It's a huge tourism and hospitality industry out there, and everybody's just spigots completely been shut off at the casinos.
Oh yeah, it seems like more than half this town's out of work right now.
Yeah, right.
But appreciate your Corona Bros talks, because I'm arguing with people online, and half the people seem like they're for it, and half the people are like ready to go back to work.
Yeah, I think that's right.
But it's the tide's turning, though. We're getting more people, rational people, speaking up.
Yeah, so how would you assess this from the sports perspective? Who should bear the risk of loss?
I'm going with nuttier answers. I'm going with the government should reimburse the individual. Like, I got DirecTV, and, I mean, I can't fault DirecTV. I can't fault the players. I can't fault the league. The only ones I could fault are the ones who directed this.
Yeah, thanks for the call. Yeah, thanks for the call. The government didn't shut down the leagues. The leagues could figure out a way to play. Like, Dana White is getting a fight going on May 9th in Jacksonville, Florida. WrestleMania happened as well. If necessity is the mother of invention, if the leagues wanted to put on a televised product, they could do it. They haven't been willing to do it so far, but there's nothing stopping the NBA from saying, hey, every player right now, we're picking you up and we're going to the Bahamas, and you're going to be all quarantined on the Bahamas, and we're playing the rest of this NBA season to fulfill the terms of our contract so everybody gets paid. There's nothing stopping that from happening. There's nothing stopping Major League Baseball from making the decision to put its players back to work as well. Now, the fans being able to go to the games, that's different. But in terms of fulfilling the obligations to put on a televised product, there's nothing stopping the leagues from being able to do that right now. By and large, they could find a place where they could put on games. I mean, we're about to see the PGA. NASCAR is about to come back. Like, they could figure out a way to get back if they wanted to. Who's up next, Dub?
We got Jeff in Virginia.
Jeff, what do you think?
I think it's pretty simple. All this could be prorated from each level to the players, to the networks, to the customer buying the product. And if there's no season, nobody gets paid. It's pretty simple. It's not that complicated like you're making it out to be. But that's just my opinion on it. But you've got like people like Stephen A. making $6 to $8 million a year and a salary on ESPN talking about the same stuff day in and day out. Skip Bayless talking about the Cowboys 5 days a week for 4 hours or 2 hours, whatever he's on. I mean, it's just highly overpaid. And, you know, proration is the only way you can do this.
Thanks for the call. I don't think that's a bad idea. Now, to be fair to Skip Bayless, Stephen A., and to pretty much everybody in my industry, we all took pay cuts. Everybody who works on Fox and everybody who works on ESPN got pay cuts as a result of the sports games, the games not going on. So that's funny a little bit in and of itself, because most of the players have not seen a ding in their salary yet. We're still all doing our jobs. Like, my job hasn't changed. in terms of the amount of work that I'm doing. I'm just making less money to do it. So far, most athletes haven't seen a ding in their paychecks, even though they're not doing their jobs at all. So the pro rata portion makes some sense, except the fans are still paying. Like, if you had a cable subscription in April, you paid full freight for sports that didn't exist. And if you had a cable subscription in March, you paid full freight for games that didn't exist for half the month. And you're about to pay full freight again in May for games that don't exist. So the pro rata would be it doesn't exist, right? Or you say, what's the value of ESPN without live sports? Well, you look at the numbers. I mean, the easy way to look at it would be, okay, let's look at total viewership for ESPN. How much did it go down in March and April? That's how much less a consumer should pay. And I'm sure the number is massively lower because most people in April who watch ESPN are watching it for the playoffs. And I'm not trying to pick on the NBA playoffs. I'm not trying to pick on ESPN. NBC Sports Network ordinarily has the NHL playoffs. Well, the vast majority of people who watch the NBC Sports Network would do so to see the playoffs. And those playoffs don't exist. So why are the players still being paid from the fans for games that they're not putting on? I don't think they should be. Who's up next?
Last one for now. We got Kevin in L.A.
Kevin, what do you think?
Hey, what's going on, Clay? I just want to say, we're all blessed. God's getting us through all of this. And, I've been listening to you since your first show. So, I have a little credence in this. You know, when you came out and you talked about this, you mentioned, this was like the flu. You were wrong on that. But you came back and you said, you admitted you were wrong. And you said, I'm going to give you guys the facts every day. And that's all you've been doing. You talked about the fear porn. And, I watched this fear porn and I'm like, what are these guys talking about? Talking about 2 years, it's going to be 2 years of this,
Yeah.
Negativity. And I think some of these other teams hear this stuff and they get scared when they talk about opening the practice facilities. You have these news outlets saying you can't open a practice facility. It's too early. It's too early. So everybody's scared, but like you said, we got to get back to work. We got to get back. People are depressed. This social distancing thing, I can't stand it.
Yeah.
I want to see sports. Honestly, with the question, I think it's a combination of the players, the owners, the TV station, the networks. It's all a combination of all of that. But sooner or later, these guys got to play. I understand your frustration, Clay.
Yeah.
But like I said, it's the media outlets. It's the fear porn. It's constant negativity. We got to get to the positivity.
Yeah. Thanks for the call. I think you're 100% right. There are a lot of leagues out there that are terrified because they're being told all the time, okay, if you come back, what happens when a player tests positive like Rudy Gobert did? And my answer is you isolate him, get him healthy, just like you would if they got sick with something else. The data reflects that young people are not going to die of the coronavirus, especially not young and healthy people. We know, 10 guys in the NBA have already tested positive for this thing. And those 10 guys, most of them didn't even have symptoms. They were 100% healthy. Remember Kevin Durant, Donovan Mitchell, Rudy Gobert? The majority of those 10 didn't even know that they had it. Kevin Durant's a great example. Huge superstar. Had the coronavirus. Had no idea. Several different NFL players have had the coronavirus. Had no impact on them. Because young and healthy people, you talked about the flu, young and healthy people are more likely to die of the flu than they are the coronavirus. Well, a league would never shut down for the flu, right? I mean, in fact, if one of your favorite players set out a big game because he had the flu, people would have been furious. Jordan's partly famous because of the flu game. If he had not played in that game, he would be much less of a legend than because he played in that game. We expect players in big games to play even if they're under the weather. And so I do think that Kevin's right. I think that a lot of these leagues have bought into the idea that the coronavirus is more dangerous to their players than it is. And frankly, I think a lot of players have bought into it as well. I think a lot of them think they might die from this. And the data is that there's almost no chance of that happening if you're young and healthy. But the risk of loss is a big story here. And I think there are going to be a lot of lawsuits surrounding it before all is said and done. Appreciate all of you hanging out with us. We come back. We'll talk with Jeff Schwartz about this, see what he thinks, see if he thinks players are even thinking about this, and what percentage of players would be like, screw it, let's play if suddenly you took away 100% of their income. Interesting questions, I think, in general.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
I put up, and I think we'll carry this over to the top of the hour, I put up a poll question for you. Who should bear the risk of loss in your opinions? Is it fans? Is it players and teams? Is it the cable and satellite company? Is it ESPN, FS1, and NBC Sports Network? Who should bear that risk of loss? We got a bunch of people who want to weigh in on phones. Let's go ahead, Dub. Who is anybody good there, ready to roll?
Start things off with Mark in Virginia.
Mark, what do you think?
Good morning. Kudos on a good show.
Appreciate that.
One thing I want to interject here, and this is more of a Q&A, and I'm not sure if your research people can look into it. I believe that, and maybe I missed the conversation, your past is illegal. How are these contracts set up? Are they in calendar years, games played? Because, you know, there's going to be a lot more fifth-year options if these things are set up on you're playing for us 5 years at this calendar year, and let's say, God forbid, the season's canceled. Do they lose that player's service for a full year? So I think we need to actually dig into the contracts to see how they're set up, because this is obviously these are strange times.
Yeah, that's a really smart question. And the answer is Major League Baseball has said, for instance, certainly in the NBA and the NHL, where they started the season and, you know, played three quarters of the regular season, all the players get full credit for the seasons that they played. So, you know, for purposes of free agency, then that is a then you're, you know, fully covered there in the NBA and the NHL. For Major League Baseball, this was a big point of negotiation, and they have said this year counts as a fulfilled contract year. So they're not extending contracts. So, for instance, if you're a Dodger fan, Mookie Betts is only under contract for this year with the Dodgers. So if the season never happens, Mookie Betts is a free agent. So he gets credit for this season, even though he may not play. Again, I don't know that any other sports talk show in the country is going to point out all of the complexity associated with the business side of this. But the reason why this is so important is ultimately business often dictates what gets done. And if you stop paying players, then a lot of players are going to say, okay, it's time to go back to work, period. Because they're going to say, yeah, we'll risk it because we got to make a living. Just like a lot of people out there, you know, like a coal miner is risking his health every single day for a paycheck. So is a police officer. Or a lot of people right now working in grocery stores. They're making calculated decisions in exchange for money. I will risk my health. Who's up next, Dub?
We got Aaron in Nashville.
Aaron, what you got for me?
All right. I got an interesting angle about this, because someone told me a long time ago, do you want to be right or do you want to be smart? And I don't know if you remember, a long time ago, Fox was kind of just a sitcom station, right?
Yeah.
Then they got that big NFL contract. They snagged it, paid
a king's
ransom. These networks, you know, that are trying to play, oh, I don't want to pay this, I don't want to pay that. When those TV contracts come back up, and they will, I mean, how do you think that's going to play out?
Yeah,
and I think that's a major factor, because the money they're losing this year, they're going to make all that money back in the next 10. And if they lose that contract, the well runs dry.
It's a really smart point, because the leagues can say next time you negotiate, hey, we remember when we were dealing with the toughest situation that has ever existed in the history of our sport. You weren't there for us. And therefore, we're going to try to go somewhere else. But what if the leagues all agree that they're getting screwed here? Because remember, the leagues aren't just having to pay out for games that aren't being played. They're not making any of the money based on television advertising. So this is really complicated. Again, I don't think most people have thought about it. And again, to the call we just got there, do you know who's paying for all of this right now? Fans. We're bearing the risk of loss. We're putting the money in the league and team player pockets still through our cable and satellite subscriptions because we're paying full freight without getting what we bargained for as a part of our cable deals. Think about it.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
Jeff Schwartz joins us now. Jeff, if you told players right now 100% of your salaries are going away, how many of them would be ready to immediately play regardless of the sport?
Most of them. I mean, this is kind of why there's been discussion about, you know, if we're going back to play, how the players feel about, you know, playing, but, you know, everyone else is kind of, you know, shut down otherwise. I think players need to play, right? A lot of players aren't making millions and millions of dollars, especially, I'll just speak for the NFL, it's a different sport than other leagues. You know, 90% of players aren't making like that big second contract. And yeah, a lot of guys would just play. I mean, even if the risk was, hey, you might get sick or someone in your family might get sick or, you know, maybe your parents or grandparents get sick, I think they would take the risk of playing. Because especially in the NFL, you know, your years are numbered, and if you lose one earning year because of coronavirus, you're not making that money up ever again. So I think players would play really no matter what.
And we saw that kind of right with the addition of the 17th game, where a lot of the more wealthy players said, "Hey, we don't like this idea," but the impact in terms of the salary increase for minimum wage guys in the NFL, non-max contract guys, was substantial. And so players want to play. I mean, it doesn't sound a lot of times I think the media is arguing as if the players don't want to play, but the reality is if the money goes away, players will be like, hey, let's go back to work.
Exactly. Look, there are a couple players, I think I saw in baseball, a couple players said, like, hey, I wouldn't play this year if it wasn't safe. But a lot of those guys have made $20 million a year over multiple years now, right? And obviously, you know, you can weather the storm for one season if you made that much money. Also, if you count endorsement money and playoff bonuses, whatever else in these other sports, I just think in the NFL especially with, you know, the league being so young, a lot of young people don't pay attention to what's happening, I think, as thoroughly as older people do, or even just people that, have matured a little bit. I mean, you know, do I expect a 22-year-old, 23-year-old, 24-year-old to be paying close attention to the coronavirus? Not really, honestly. I mean, I know at that age, I don't know if I would have paid attention to it in as much detail.
Especially if they don't feel like they're in danger, which they aren't.
Correct. And then, like, you know, now I have kids and I have a life and I have things going on. Like, I pay attention to it a lot more than I would when I was 23 years old. And so, then, you know, the younger players are just like, whatever, I'll just play. If I get sick, I get sick. And that's one reason why I think the NFL is back. I think we're going to get sports back. We've seen schools now, you know, slowly keep announcing that they're planning to be open in the fall. I talked to someone at a college on the West Coast, and I mean the amount of money lost.
Oh yeah,
even just to play college football with no fans would be, it'd be eight figures. I mean, like it's a lot, multiple eight figures. It's a lot of money. And here's why college football is different than the NFL as far as funding and where they get their money from. You know, the NFL gets most of their money from TV deals, right? And along Amazon, Verizon, like they're big deals. College football, a lot of the money is generated from boosters, and a lot of times you have to give. Are you a season ticket holder for the Vols or not?
For the Titans. Okay. Not for the University of Tennessee.
Right. So like, in the NFL you have PSLs, right? So it's a one-time payment, to guarantee
to be able to get the right
year.
to buy the seats. Yep.
In college football it's a booster fee, right? And you pay it every year. So you know, my parents have been season ticket holders of UCLA football since like 1977.
Yeah.
And they, you know, they pay $1,000 each and every year, $1,500, whatever it is, to guarantee their right to two tickets or four. I mean, it's two now. Those fees add up over time, and that's where a lot of the money from college football gets generated, those booster fees. Well, if no one's in the crowd, you're not getting those fees anymore, and that's where the lost revenue is. And if you can't play college football, you can't play other sports because there's no money to pay for other sports. And I think colleges are starting to realize that that's a major problem, and they're going to have to find ways to make sure that kids are at least on campus in some event, you know, some fashion to be able to play football in the fall.
NFL draft just happened over the weekend. What team or teams did you particularly like the draft of?
You know, I like the Cowboys draft. You know, the goal of a draft is, in my opinion, finding value, right? You want to try to find players, you know, at a spot where the value is highest. So the Cowboys, to me, ended up getting CeeDee Lamb and Diggs, the first two picks, at spots that I think were highly valuable. I think Diggs dropping second round was value for them. CeeDee Lamb, I think 17, was good value for them. I think that the Browns did a good job. I think that the Broncos did a good job of just adding weapons for Drew Locke, and they got speed. It's interesting, if you look at the AFC West, the Raiders and Broncos both went with speed because they have to keep up with the Chiefs. They, they just said, we're going to get the fastest players we can. You go with the Chiefs.
The idea being you're not going to shut the Chief offense down. You got to outscore them.
Yeah, and it's, you know, interesting to see the trend. I think the Ravens, just generally speaking, always do a good job, but they ended up with the player everyone had mocked to them. You know what's interesting about all offensive linemen drafted is I'm not sure they're all great fits. And I'll tell you what, your Titans, though, with Isaiah Wilson, he needs some work, but to put him at right tackle was a great fit for the Titans to end up, you know, getting him where they did. You know, there's a little, I mean, Tampa did a great job with Tristan Wirfs and Winfield Jr. I mean, two guys right now that'll start and be impact players. A lot of teams did some really good stuff, I thought. It was a very, very deep draft. I mean, looking at like a guy like
Taylor
Johnson from Utah, the cornerback who, by all accounts, is a top 20 player, had a little shoulder surgery, and he falls to 50. I mean, it's a remarkable value to get him at 50.
A second round. I mean, I watched, you know, we're quarantined, so I watched a lot more of the draft than I ordinarily would. Same. And, you know, I watch a lot of college football, but all through the second round, I was like, man, that guy's a stud. You know, like a lot of times you watch first round picks and you're like, I'm not sure about that guy. I watched him play off and on. But I mean, when you look at the number of big time, big, you know, playmakers who were going in the second round and not even early in the second round, like mid to late in the second round, even into the third round. I mean, this was one of the deepest drafts I can remember in a long time.
It was, you know, I was tasked with writing like winners and losers type of thing, or like best value picks on day two. And I was like, there's like 15 of them. There's so many that can be. I mean, you know, even go back to other like offense, like Josh Jones was a Cardinals drafted 72nd overall in the third round. Most people had a first round grade on him, like a fringe first round grade. You got a fringe first rounder all the way at the middle of round three. I mean, it's amazing to see what. There wasn't like I hope everyone pans out, but this felt like a year where it just was a good. You know, there might not have been as many, let's say, elite players at the very top. You know, Chase Young, obviously, and, you know, a couple offensive linemen and Isaiah Simmons. But, like, there's just a lot of depth and a lot of playmakers right away that's going to help a lot of these teams.
Herbert, Tua, or Burrow, who would you want to buy stock in right now? Which one?
Well, Burrow is going to play first. I feel pretty strongly about that. Look, I know people, you know, vary on their opinion on Justin Herbert, but he landed in the best spot. There's no doubt about it. I mean, you look at the Chargers, what they did this offseason, even just the offense, they added two offensive linemen, right guard and right tackle. They upgraded those two. They can still add a Donald Penn or Jason Peters to, you know, for left tackle. They have all the weapons, right? Hunter Henry's back on the franchise. Keenan Allen, Mike Williams, Austin Eckler. They drafted actually a running back at UCLA who was pretty good, in my opinion, Joshua Kelly. And Herbert can sit for a year. Like, he can go and just kind of get in the groove of an NFL season and learn behind Tyrod Taylor, who we knew was already helping out quarterbacks in Buffalo. You know, Tua, I liked the Dolphins picking Tua. I think they should have done it. I think he's better than Herbert. But here's a situation with no offensive line. I mean, they drafted two guys, but two guys I don't think are really ready to play yet. And you have not a lot of weapons. And, you know, you're going to kind of be asked to play early because Fitzpatrick is there. And then, you know, the Bengals actually have weapons. But I, you know, just it's tough to come in as a rookie and play right away, especially in this offseason. This is something that we need to look at, because there's no offseason program, right? So everyone's showing up in fall camp. Rookies are going to be behind, very behind, because there's nothing. And as much as you can try to learn virtually, that doesn't really matter. You need to learn in person.
Jeff Schwartz with us now, finishing up his guest hit. Jeff, when you look at, you were just talking about the quarterback situation and everybody else, assuming that that the season starts on time, who are guys, and you know, I know you mentioned the offseason, the difficulties associated with being ready to roll, but who are guys that you saw that were drafted and you thought, oh, this guy is going to be an immediate impact player on offense or defense? Maybe three or four guys out there.
Well, number one, in my opinion, is Tristan Wirfs, the right tackle that the Bucs draft him. He is a prototypical right tackle. He's athletic as heck. And he's a guy, like, you know, when you talk about impact players, you know, a guy that solidifies their offensive line. Like, they needed a right tackle. They got a right tackle at 13. You know, a guy that was not expected, I think, to be there, you know, at that position. You know, I think a guy like Jerry Jeudy going to the Broncos, I mean, I think we're going to see immediate impact helping, you know, Drew Locke be able to, you know, to succeed. I didn't really like the Chiefs' pick of their running back, but if you look at the way he fits their offense, I mean, he's going to have an immediate impact in helping that offense continue to do well. Brandon Ayuk for the 49ers, you know, playing wide receiver in that offense. I mean, there's just so many guys, you know, you look at Andrew Thomas and Mekhi Becton, Jedrick Wills. There's so many guys that, to your point about the depth of this draft, that feel like immediate impact players outside the quarterback position.
Did anything happen in the draft that changed your opinion about who the best team is coming into the 2020 season?
No, I mean, it kind of solidified my opinion that the Chiefs and the Ravens in the AFC, I think, are easily the top two right now. You look at the NFC, you look at Tampa, New Orleans, I think, did a good job with their picks. You know, the Eagles got better. The Hurts pick, we could debate that. I like that better than the Packers drafting Love. I mean, I'm selling all my Packers stock. I'm out on the Packers. And the best.
Well, how do you think Aaron Rodgers reacted to that pick?
He hated it. Look, I we've seen that there's a strong history of older quarterbacks not mentoring young players, and that's fine. It has worked out in the most part for all those young quarterbacks that were not mentored. The idea that Aaron Rodgers is now going to be different and you know, go out of his way to help Jordan Love, it's just not what's going to happen. He was pissed about it. In the deepest wide receiver class in 20 years, they didn't draft a single wide receiver. And then they announced they're going to run this old-school run-first offense. It's ridiculous. They got worse.
Jeff Schwartz, thank you as always. We'll talk to you next week. Good luck with the kids and the new pool. I saw it's coming in.
Yeah, it's coming in, buddy. All right, take care.
That is Jeff Schwartz. Go follow him on Twitter. A lot to unpack there. He said just got his pool finished. When we come back in hour three, we're going to be joined by Chris Mannix. We'll continue this conversation about the sports leagues coming back. If you're just waking up, Major League Baseball putting in place potentially an ideal plan based on the East, the West, and the Central in terms of what they would be planning for the return of Major League Baseball. We'll talk with Chris Mannix about whether he believes the NBA will be back or not. Steve Kerr saying in his mind that the Golden State Warriors season is over. What does Chris Mannix think about that? All that still to come in hour three. Appreciate you guys hanging out with us. This is Outkick the Coverage. Go download the podcast. Make sure you don't miss anything at all. We got a poll question up where you can vote as well. Go check me out at Clay Travis.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.
Chris Mannix joins us now at SI Chris Mannix. Chris, I'll start with this question. What's the latest? Are you more or less optimistic about the NBA returning than you were last week when we talked to you?
You know, I'm still right around the same place I was last week, and I was talking to somebody in the league office last night who, you know, and I kind of asked him the same question. I had spoken to him a few weeks back, and I said, are you any more or less optimistic? And he's someone that's been on the pessimistic side, and he remained the same. You know, we hear it kind of all over the country and in the context of reopening everything. But the message coming from NBA people is we can get this off the ground. We can go do the whole bubble-like concept, but there has to be testing. There just has to be – look, Clay, they're going to – the NBA,
like, they can get their hands on 10,000 tests. Like, they can just buy them. Like, that's just the way it is with how they're planning to move forward. But they can't do it, or at least not, at least they won't do it, while the country is still searching for tests at a high level. So that's really the biggest benchmark they're waiting for. When testing becomes widespread, I think they'll be ready to hit the ground running. But at this point, I don't have a ton of confidence that that's going to happen in the next month and a half.
All right, let me take a step back on the testing, because I do think this is interesting. Testing is not really that reliable. And what I mean by that is, in order to test accurately, you would almost have to test every single day. And we still know it wouldn't necessarily work, because there's a huge percentage of young and healthy people who are asymptomatic and might not even, you know, they might already be carrying the disease before we're aware that they have it. Does that make sense? So unless you're testing every single day, I don't really understand the point here from an NBA. Like, I would love to talk with the NBA health examiners and things like that who they're talking with, because the other thing is, the flu is killing more people who are under the age of 30 every year than the coronavirus is. So I understand maybe a concern about older officials or older coaches and things like that, because this is really two different impacts when it's old and young. But the testing thing seems to me like a focal point here for the NBA that might not actually protect players like they're thinking the players are going to be protected. Does that make sense?
It makes sense. I would say two things. One is, the message I've been getting is that they do want to test players every single day. Like, they, whether it's because of the players or the older coaches there that you're talking about, they don't want to just do this once, then quarantine them and say it's okay. They want to do it either every day or every other day,
okay, so
but on a regular.
That's an interesting, and I'm sorry to cut you off, but that leads to this, this important question. So what happens if somebody tests positive?
I think it comes down to where we're at, you know, with whether it's therapeutics or something. I don't think that there's an answer to that question just yet. I mean, I think the NBA is banking on the fact that if they get these, like, that testing would almost be just a confirmation of what they've been doing. Like, if they get these guys into a quarantine situation where they're in basically a bubble and they're locked into a hotel and they're not around other people, that it won't be an issue. But I don't think they've gotten quite there yet on what to do. But I think the more important thing with the testing, Clay, is that it's as much about the optics as anything else. Like, they just can't be willing to do these types of tests, even if they're not that consequential. Even if you're right, where they're not doing it enough to make it worth it, they can't, you know, be testing, you know, athletes in a sport when places around the country are still clamoring for them.
Okay, that's an interesting point too. But then the point on the testing becomes, if someone tests positive, are they going to say, well, we have to go back to the Rudy Gobert situation where everybody has to go quarantine themselves, in which case I don't think they can come back and do the season, right? The only way they could do it is if somebody tests positive, then they go ahead and pull that player out and get them back healthy, but they treat it like the flu or, you know, some other injury, sprained ankle, whatever you want to call it, where somebody can't play, but they're trying to work them back healthy, but they don't then shut down the rest of the league, right? It's because if they shut down the rest of the league, then every time somebody tests positive, they shut down for 2 weeks. Well, they can't do anything, right? Like, it effectively makes the league impossible. Now, that is one larger question. The other one is this, and this is what we've been talking about a lot on the show so far today, Chris, and I don't know if you've talked to very many people about this or even really contemplated it, but I was saying, when I put on my lawyer hat, when I was in law school, risk of loss was a big topic when it came to contracts, right? Like, who bears the risk of a loss if, let's say, you're shipping something in and there's a product on a ship and the ship sinks, right? Is it the person who owns the ship? Is it the person who's trying to buy it? Is it the person who sold it? Like, this is massive when it comes to, let's say, freight cargo, right? Because a ship could sink. You could lose everything that's on that ship. Effectively, we have a major risk of loss situation here for the NBA. And I'm using them particularly because obviously you're an NBA guy, but the same thing would apply for the NHL, Major League Baseball. Somebody is, the NBA players by and large are still being paid even though a substantial portion of their contracts, even though they aren't still delivering the most important portion of their contract, which is the NBA playoffs, right? Most of the interest for the NBA is directly connected to the NBA playoffs. It would represent a massive portion of the overall viewership of the NBA, even though there's an 82-game regular season. Right now, fans are bearing the risk of loss because, and you would be one of these people too, if you have a cable or satellite subscription, you're paying full freight for TNT and ESPN just like you would be if the NBA playoffs were fully underway. Have you heard any conversations about that? Because I think a lot of fans are starting to say, wait a minute, if they don't want to play, that's fine, but why should I still be paying the NBA when the players aren't producing?
Yeah, look, I had this kind of conversation yesterday with somebody that's involved with this part of the league office. And the one thing I would say about the risk being borne through all this when it comes to players and to owners, the NBA has got a system set up where it's different than most other sports leagues, where players are going to get 51% of the basketball-related income no matter what. So whether they're garnishing checks now or hunting them down for money in early next season, it's all going to come out the same way, right? Like they've got it worked out. It's not like what's going on right now with like the English Premier League, where they're just battling for every dollar because the player contracts say that they're owed this amount of money, and because revenue's not coming in, owners are trying to get that money back. In the NBA, whatever the basketball-related income is for the year, that's how it's all divided up. So an example is, you know, if a player is – if you see all the reports all the time where, you know, LeBron James is going to make $34 million this year. Well, not really, right? He's going to make $34 million if the income is basically what it was last year or is flat on what it was the year before. If the income is significantly less, that means guys like LeBron and others are going to make significantly less. So it's really – when it comes to players and owners – how they manage the risk, it's already set up in the way the collective bargaining agreement is written.
Yeah, okay, so I guess what I'm saying is, let's think about it in terms of the way the revenue comes in, right? One easy way that the revenue comes in is through the gate, and most fans understand that. But fans are going to get their money back, or they're going to get a credit for all of the games that they paid for in season tickets, I would imagine, that aren't actually played, right? So let's say that there is 9 or 10 games, I don't know what the average would be, that are not going to be played. Fans will get a credit for those 9 or 10 games if you're a season ticket holder or if you bought individual tickets for those games. And certainly nobody's going to have to pay for the playoff tickets, given that the playoff might not happen. And even if it does happen, it's not going to be played in front of fans. But every single fan who has a subscription to ESPN or to TNT is continuing to pay full price in April and in May and on into June for the NBA without the NBA being there, and they're not going to get any refund for it. So the television dollars from a fan perspective, like when I sit back and think about it, I am paying for product that is never going to be delivered. And the NBA is getting that money, right? They're not getting the money for the tickets for the games that aren't played. And I think most people would say that's fair. But for the television, all of the league money is still coming in, even though they aren't delivering the product. And therefore, the teams and the players are going to get that money as a part of their overall salary.
Yeah, I mean, I think I get it. But like, how do you divide up like what the league is getting from that ESPN, like versus like what a fan might be getting for watching something else, like studio shows that they might want to watch? Or
it's an excellent question. I think the way you would divide it up is just by looking at television ratings and saying, you know, the average, when you look at the, like, there's a gross number of viewers of NBA product over the course of an 82-game season plus the playoffs. What percentage of that viewership on the last 5-year average has been the final, you know, whatever it is, 18 games of the regular season plus the entire playoffs? My bet would be that it's like 80% of the value of the television contract is the playoffs.
Oh, I would agree. I would agree. And if that's the case, and if there's a way to refund that money, I'd be all for it. I mean, I don't know how you consume cable at this point. I mean, I've gone complete cord cutter over the last 5 years. So, like, if it was me, I'd just
So how do you watch the NBA then?
I mean, I use DirecTV Now, basically, or whatever it is now, AT&T Now.
You still have a subscription in some way, right? Like
To that, which is, of course, markedly cheaper than a regular cable subscription.
Yeah, so I'm just fascinated by it from a risk of loss perspective. And it's not just the NBA, but you're our NBA expert. The same thing is happening right now with Major League Baseball, with the NHL. All of these sports which aren't fulfilling their contractual obligations under a TV contract, fans are still paying full freight as if those games are being played. And the analogy we hit on, Chris, and I'm sure like this is kind of, I mean, everybody out there will understand it. If a performer doesn't show up for a concert, you would never have to pay for that concert, right? And effectively on television, that's what we've got fans doing.
Yeah, no, I mean, I guess the only way I'd be able to answer is, I mean, if you can divide it up to see exactly what the NBA value is and refund that portion of the money, I'd be all for that. I think you and I both probably agree that there's just no way that they'll ever attempt something like that.
Oh, it's a mess. But I think there may well end up being lawsuits, as there often are, and lawyers involved trying to assess this risk of loss before all is said and done. He's great. He's at SI Chris Mannix. Appreciate the time, my man.
You got it, Clint.